So this is our fourth and final day of our retreat here in the Franciscan Center in October 2013. And we've had some very nice weather for Florida. Very nice Florida winter weather, fall weather. Just to come back to where we began 4 days ago. This has been a retreat on becoming intimate with life, moment-to-moment mindfulness. Hopefully today, as opposed to Thursday, the words are the same as were said on Thursday. Perhaps, hopefully, the meaning and the experience of what becoming intimate with life is really about. And you have some sense of moment-to-moment mindfulness. You know, again, because of time constraints, we only did the first three establishments. But the fourth will be dealt with at some future time. But I really believe the three are enough for everybody at this moment. They have really brought us very deeply into life. They have shown us a direction for connecting with life that is free of perceptions, conceptions, issues, all the endless filters that we've developed since childhood. It has shown us a very easy and direct way to leave all that behind and connect with life directly and deeply in where it's experienced, and is experienced quite simply in our body and our mind. That is what we've been dealing with. The establishment of mindfulness in the body, the establishment of mindfulness in the realm of feelings, and mindfulness in the realm of the mind. If we can master that, if we could develop some mastery of that, we really have the capacity for truly living a happy life, and a happy life that is not based on situation or environment or things or other people, but is simply based on the inherent capacity that each and every one of us has to be happy and free. There's a final section in the sutra, so skipping over the fourth establishment, in which the Buddha says to his followers, the one who practices in the four establishments of mindfulness for 7 years can expect one of two fruits, the highest understanding in this life, or if there remains some residue of affliction, he can attain the fruit of no return. The fruit of no return has many different meanings, but it's a highly developed state. It is not full understanding, but is enough understanding that you're not going to return to life conditions and mind states that have any degree of suffering or delusion in them. Let alone 7 years, whoever practices the four established mindfulness for 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 years, or 1 year can also expect one of two fruits. Either the highest understanding in this life, or if there remains some residue of affliction, they can attain the fruit of no return. Let alone 1 year. Whoever practices in the four establishments of mindfulness for 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, or 2 months, 1 month, a half a month, can also expect one of two fruits, either the highest understanding in this very life, or if there remains some residue of affliction, they can attain the fruit of no return. Let alone half a month. Whoever practices the four establishments of mindfulness for 1 week can also expect one or two fruits, either the highest understanding in this life, or if there remains some residue of affliction, they can attain the fruit of no return. Is that clear? Now, for those of you who don't believe you have the capacity of practicing this way for a week, in a later translation of this same sutra in the Chinese canon, there is another section where not only is there from the 7 day to the 6 to the 5 days and nights, 4 days and nights, 3 days and nights, 2 days and nights, 1 day and night, a practitioner who practices being established in the foregrounds of mindfulness for just a few hours. Now everybody here can do that. He or she begins the practice in the morning. By the evening, there will have been progress. And if he or she begins in the afternoon, by nightfall, there will have been progress. Is that clear? Amen. So, if you really want to be free, and all the nonsense, garbage issues, delusions, emotional afflictions, negative thinking, all those things that are cruising around in your mind, if you really want to be free of them, and you trust and have confidence in the teacher, the Buddha, in the teachings, and in the community of people who have practiced them, then you will make an effort. And whether you're able to make that effort for 7 years consistently, or even if you can just make it for a few hours every day, you will experience significant rewards. After the Buddha said that, he said, "This is why we said in the beginning that this path, the path of the four grounds for the establishment of mindfulness, is the most wonderful path, which helps beings realize purification, transcend grief and sorrow, destroy pain and anxiety, travel the right path, and realize nirvana. The followers who heard this talk by the Buddha were delighted with his teachings. They took it to heart and began to put it into practice." It's quite simple, isn't it? It is said in Buddhism, one hears the teachings, one reflects deeply on the teachings, and then one takes it into one's heart and practices. But for many of us, somewhere along the line, there is a disconnect. And so I think I would like to spend a little time this morning, since we want to spend this the few minutes we have now to really talk about going forward, and how we can bring the teachings and the practices we've learned about in the last 4 days into our daily life. So there it is, right? Hear the teachings, reflect deeply on the teachings, take them to heart, practice them, come to realization. That's it. So I ask you, where's the disconnect? Because somewhere along the line there, for most people, there's a disconnect. Where's your disconnect? Do you know where your disconnect is? Maybe your disconnect is right in the beginning. You know, you sit and you hear the teachings, and you go to retreats, or you go to Dharma talks, and you're on YouTube, or you're on the internet listening to endless talks, and you're reading the talks. but you're not really paying attention. You know, so for some of us, a disconnect is in the beginning. We're really not focused. Right? We're not really 100% absorbing. Even when we're listening, we're thinking, or we're thinking about what we're hearing, or we're discounting what we're hearing, or we're doing our if buts, or all the nonsense the mind is capable of throwing up. Or we hear a talk, or we read, and as soon as the talk's over, we put it down. We just go about our normal business. We don't even think about it. It just seeps away, right? So maybe the disconnect is it never really gets in. You know, never gets absorbed, right? It's like people who don't chew their food. It doesn't get absorbed. Right? We have to, if we want some remediation of our suffering and our delusion, then we have to, and we are seemingly practicing. And I acknowledge that everybody here, we're at a retreat, right? So this is called seemingly, we look like we're practicing. But if we're not getting the results that are very clearly the results of the practice, then again, we want to really look deeply into and honestly, where's the disconnect? Maybe it disconnects right in the beginning. I listen, but I really, it doesn't seep in. I don't really pay attention. I'm all over the place. I don't really care. It's just like something that I know is good for me or something I'm interested in, but it never really gets beyond this, wherever that is. So it hasn't even gotten in here yet. It's kind of still floating around. So that could be a place of disconnect. Our body is present, but we really never really hear. And then the second big piece is this piece where the Buddha instructs reflect, which means after we hear a teaching, after we learn about a teaching or a practice, do we really reflect on it? Do we really chew and chew and chew and digest? And, does it make sense to me? What's really being said here? What's the meaning of this? How does this relate to my life, the way I'm running my life, the situation? Does it have any relevance to what I'm dealing with in my life? Does it shine any light on areas of my life where there is unhappiness or suffering or confusion or affliction so that deep reflection and digestion maybe has never gone on. We read the teaching, we like the teachings, we bow to the teachings, we buy more books on the teachings, our library grows, our knowledge grows, we love to talk about the teachings, anybody who listens will talk to them about it, but we never really have talked about it with ourselves. And that's, again, for many people, that's a big disconnect. Why it doesn't go too far in terms of really getting inside, where we really get it and we really understand it. And so, therefore, our commitment to our own realization, our own transformation, our own healing, our own awakening, is not grounded on any kind of consistent understanding or aspiration, because we've never, again, really, at least even conceptually or personally, gotten to the meaning of it and really, that it really means something to us. So often in this middle ground of reflection, there can be many disconnects. And then, of course, the third disconnect is around practice. Now, obviously, if the disconnect is in the first two somewhere. You know, there's not going to be a lot of electricity getting through to the piece of practice. Not going to be a lot of energy getting through, because there's too much disconnection already. Right? Because, you know, I mean, this is so clear, right? I mean, this is so clear and so strong and so obvious and promises so much. Right? And yet most of us will, you know, oh, how was retreat? It was a good retreat. And we'll go back to our daily lives and we'll just, you know, continue on. You know, maybe be a little more mindful for a few days. And then habit energy and the way we've always done things will, we'll get back dealing with the real things, the important things in life. And today, what seems so meaningful and obvious and necessary and important and significant and purposeful will recede somewhere in the outer reaches or inner reaches or somewhere of our mind. And therefore, our practice will be half-hearted. Our practice will be kind of automatic. Our practice will be spotty. Our practice will not have any energy. There'll be no juice in our practice. And then we go to Sangha, we go to retreats for what? To get a little juiced up again. And many people practice like this for years. And yet he says right here, you know, practice it for a week. Right? Practice it for a week, right, Andrew? Just for a week. And you can come to a deep realization. But we say what? I'm too busy. I don't have time for this. I'm a busy guy. Right? We're all very busy. I'm just using your name as a reflection of all of us. Don't. I just happen to be looking at you. But it's like that. As we return to our daily life, we're all, you know, where the silence and the support of a community and the teachings and the structure and the schedule and all the stuff we do here will no longer be present to us and we'll be mostly on our own. I ask you, what's going to support you? If you really want to be free, what's going to support you? What's going to keep the fire going? These are important questions that we should reflect on before returning home. As you have learned in this retreat, everything's impermanent, right? Bodies are impermanent, mind states are impermanent, thoughts are impermanent. Sensations are impermanent, feelings are impermanent, people are impermanent, life's impermanent. Everything is changing, right? Now, that has a very strong relationship to our inconsistent, half-hearted practice, even when we mean well, right? Why is it when we set our, we get up in the morning, 24 brand new hours, right? I'm going to ground a little bit of mindfulness. And that usually lasts about 2 minutes. Right? If we're really practicing well, it may last for 5 or 10. Why is that? Right? You know, why is it you get up in the morning and Darlene says, I'm really, today, only wonderful, loving thoughts to my dear husband, Charlie. Right? 20 minutes later, he does something just annoys the hell out of you. Now why is that? You see, we got to ask ourselves, why is that? Because it's not as if you didn't mean it, right? When you made that aspiration, and you weren't sincere, and that's truly how you would like to be, right? So it's not a matter of that. What is it a matter of? A mind event lasts only as long as it's present in the mind. So that is why you can have all kinds of aspiration, all kinds of things, and you know what? It's gone. Right? It's gone. Have you noticed that? It's gone. That's the story of our life, right? You know, we can't even maintain consistency. And it's not your fault. This is the nature of the mind. There is nothing continuous. Everything is, it appears continuous, but they're just mind moments, mind moments, mind moments, mind moments, mind moments. That's just all it is. And there's no connector. They're just arising and disappearing. So what's going to connect it? If you want. I mean, what's going to connect your aspiration to be very patient and kind and loving to this guy throughout the day? Because we know the thing you say in the morning is only going to last as long as it told you to say it. Because 1 minute later, you'll have another thought, and that one will be gone, right? Is everybody clear about how this thing works? So what is going to link it? So when you have 2 hours later the encounter, that somehow that will somewhat be present in your mind and you will remember. Anybody have a clue? What's going to connect it? Mindfulness of, and in this case we're talking about mindfulness also of aspiration. Right? It's like when Debbie brought up the thing about her husband and we said, yeah, I mean, you know, it's not just going to come from wishing it, is it? We have to be very conscious, right? We have to, every morning, we have to be reflecting on it, if that's something we want to happen. And we also have to be reflecting in many ways, you know, what is it about me, within me, that these kinds of things get me frustrated, or, you know, but it's happening to me. So, you know, so the more we understand ourselves, the more we take responsibility for ourselves, the more our aspiration for how we want to be is continuous throughout the day. We're constantly checking in with it. Right? In for those of you who have been involved in our retreats and on the Bodhisattva Way, by Shantideva, you know, the Bodhisattva Way is the way that one sees the purpose of one's life, the meaning of one's life, is awakening in order to be of benefit and help to all beings. Right? That's the modus operandi of life. And Shantideva says, before he even gets into the six paramitas, the six major practices of Bodhisattva, first thing he says is what? Aspiration. You know, you have to get it in your mind and keep it in there all day. Because if you don't, what's your default? Narcissism. Right? That's our default. Narcissism. Me. Right? Self-centeredness. Afflictions. Right? That's our default. You know, some more than others. But that's basically the human default. And so if we are not mindful, right, you know, that will just simply be, you know where our actions of body, speech, and mind will come from. It can't help it. It's not your fault. It's just the way it is. So that the reason Shantideva puts some, you know, people go, hey, let's get into the real stuff, right? You know, let's get into the paramitas. Let's get into meditation and generosity and the, you know. You know, why is he spending all this time for two chapters just talking about aspiration? Because that's the key piece. Right? That keeps you going in the direction. So the aspiration lead an awakened life. The aspiration to lead a compassionate life. The aspiration to be a loving person in all the activities and all your relationship will not come about, you know, just by reading about it. You know, will not come about by just saying it one time every morning. Right? It can only come about when it's a constant presence in our minds. That is why when you're in the preparatory stages of the Bodhisattva path, you are encouraged in every activity you do to raise the thought, may this benefit beings. You're even trained to, as you encounter everybody throughout the day, to look at them and in your mind say, when I become a Buddha, it is my vow to free you from your delusion. I will do that. That means even the, you know, the people in Publix, the people waiting on you, the people, you generate that thought. So over time, your mind begins to relate to all beings in this way, that you feel responsibility towards them. It's not going to come about by itself. Right? By itself, our mind will go in the direction of me, what's in it for me. And may extend a little bit to those around us. You know, we may include them. But if we want to break out of this this cocoon of self-centeredness and narrowness and constriction and really enter into a life of real meaning and openness and spaciousness and open-heartedness and freedom, there has to be some energy behind it. Right? Or it will just wither. Is that clear? I mean, does that sound harsh? I mean, does it sound judgmental? Does it sound like I'm sermonizing? I mean, I don't know. What does it sound? I'm just sharing, you know, my experience. So as you, each of us, goes back home today, just in a few hours, what do you perceive as your obstacles to putting into practice what you've learned here? Where do you think you'll have your challenges?
Ego has its own priorities.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Inserting itself in this way and that way. Things, you know, it thinks are important and wants to do.
Mm-hmm. So again, it comes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, when we encounter the teachings, we hear the teachings, we read, does it really sink in? How deep, we could ask ourselves, how deep does it sink in? And this is a very, this is not a judgmental, you know, it's really how deep is this stuff sunk in? Because if we're saying, it really hasn't sunk very deep, you know, because when I really am honest about who's still running the show, it's not the guy who's been studying Dharma. Right? And that's, I mean, Andrew, that's a wonderful thing for you to know. You know, nothing to be frustrated with or ashamed of. It's go, wow, yeah, because if I want it to go in deep, because I know that letting self run the show with all his priorities, his needs and his wants and his dramas and his conflicts, you know, it's an endless, ultimately unsatisfactory ride in life. You know, if one knows that, then one has to again go, well, this is interesting, you know? You know, it's I feel like I've been bathing myself in Dharma for these, you know, past 5 years, and yet there are parts of me that, like, are still smell. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I've only been washing a few parts of my body. Not, you see what I'm saying? So it's an introspective question. It's something that you want to know. It's a puzzlement, and you just want to ask the right question to get at it. Because it is paradoxical, right? We say this is what we want. We say we see clearly the problems with living it this way. We see this whole other life, and yet when we step back, you know, it's sort of like if you're mindful of your mind, and you just watch your mind all day, and then just kind of add it up, right? How many fantasy thoughts? How many future-based thoughts? How many angry thoughts? How much dwelling on the negative thought? How much stress? You know what I mean? And you how many compassionate thoughts? How many loving? You know, and at the end of the day, you might go, wow, I am not who I thought I was. You know, and that's an eye opener, because then we. Because then people go, well, I've been practicing 5 years, how come I'm not happy? You see what I'm saying? If you kind of, there's no mystery here. If you look at what's going on in your mind all day, from morning till night, if you add it up, if it's not 75% on the positive side, how could you be happy? If it's like, if it's like 90% on the neutral, distressed, and negative side, and 10% of really kind of altruistic or positive kind of thought, what does that add up to? Right? This is why, again, mindfulness, am I willing, mindfulness of the mind in the mind, sort of what we did last night. Let me just look, at really what's going into my mind, and let me just, kind of according to the formation, what formations are present in me. And if I notice that it's, again, 75% of them are either negative or distractive or fantasy or, list making or, problem. You know what I mean? And you go, well, oh yeah. Yeah, I can see why he's, not too happy. You know what I mean? There's no mystery in any of this. It's actually kind of scientific, cause and effect. And so, so we want to use our mindfulness to reveal the truth of the way things are. So we can work intelligently with ourselves. So again, when you coming back to what you said, when you see, I've done all this, and if you ask me the way I want to live, this is what I'd say. And yet, if I take an honest look, I see, self and ego and its needs are still really running the show. Well, that's interesting. That shows me I still have a lot of work to do right there. Is that
I'm struck though also by the fact that I remember that every time I go back to the breath, that counts for myself, that otherwise sometimes I can get overwhelmed with the practice. Mm-hmm. Because I have seen myself do exactly what you're saying, go to the tree and come back and fired up, but I keep going to retreats because I keep wanting to get fired up.
Right.
And I think that helps to sustain the practice, and then also being part of the Sangha. And I think that cutting through the habitual thinking just takes an enormous amount of effort. And I think that there's times when I see for myself that I am fired up to put forth that effort and just be but other times I'm not, because I'm just not there yet.
Again, so the question is, it's sort of a yes, agreeing with a lot of it and saying, yeah, I go to retreat, I go to Sangha, I get all fired up, and that helps sustain me, but yet I often find that just on my own, I kind of lose it, and it seems I kind of lose that fire, lose that energy, lose that aspiration, and it's very difficult. And you're right, yet there has to be a transference. It has to get inside, right? And again, just like we just talked about, you need to look at where's the disconnect. You know, where am I not connecting with something that I know is so true that it's not inside me yet? You know, years later, it's not inside me. What's the blockage that keeps it as something external that I keep having to plug into? Because, you know, what we say is we have these seeds in us already. We even have a seed called the Bodhi seed. We have the seed of enlightenment, bodhicitta, in us, right? It's a tiny seed. Everybody has it, right? If it is nurtured, it will grow. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, do I still think it's something external that I'm getting, or am I understanding it's already in me? It's like, what's that that line I love from, the existentialist, the German, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, Frankl. Yeah, he said, what did he say? He said, thirst is the proof that water exists. Very profound. Thirst is the proof that water exists. Your yearning for liberation and freedom to be free of suffering is proof that it's already inside you. Or you couldn't have that yearning or that aspiration if it already wasn't there. So, you know, we have to get to that point where we understand it's inside me already. That's why I'm here. Let me find that and really uncover that place inside me and nurture it. See, we're not nurturing, we're doing practices. We're doing practices. We're learning different practices and we're doing practices. We're doing all this because it's still kind of structural. It's not from the heart. Right? You know, sometimes you meet people and they talk about their relationship and they said, well, you know, it's a constant work in progress. I mean, I understand that, but at some point, you know, the idea that it's constant work is telling you something about what's going on in this relationship, right? I mean, every now and then there's got to be a little repair work or a little, you know, but, right? I mean, if you're living in a house and every day you're having to repair it, you may want to sometimes look at, you know, what you bought. Or maybe the way you're going about it. Maybe things are not broken. I mean, there's lots of ways of looking at it. But it's not that hard, Evelyn. You know, we talk about joyful effort. Joyful effort isn't hard, you know. It's like I get a kick out of it. I'm enjoying this. Yeah, I'm enjoying learning about myself. I'm enjoying encountering the different parts of myself and working with them, you know. Yeah, it's really wonderful cultivating a loving kindness and compassion and, you know, and being present. Wow, this is so much easier than all that, you know, than being lost in thought. That's hard work. I mean, you know, the way of drama and melodrama and issues is hard work. Every day there's something to struggle with, right? I mean, all Alex is over there, he's got this incredible habit energy. It's like monster. Yeah. Just got him by the throat. Every day it's just warfare. He's, by the end of the day, he's exhausted, poor guy.
See, I told you what was behind some of my my thoughts when you asked that question. What is it when you leave the retreat? You'd start kicking me, so I'm not going to say it.
Right. But if you just slowed it down, you know, just slowed it down and said, you know, I'm going to get up every day, and my aspiration is to be totally open to whatever comes, not to call this good, this bad, this wanted, this unwanted, and everything that comes my way, I'm going to be present to. I'm going to do my best to see clearly. I'm going to try to respond to every situation in person with some degree of mindfulness and intelligence and wisdom and compassion. You know, I mean, I have my blueprint for the day. Right? Which is different than what Charlie was talking about, where the object is to make the day go smooth. See, that's a lot of work. Right? You know, that's like, you know, I'm gonna go out in the river today and make it smooth. Yeah. Why don't you just get in the river and go for a swim? I assure you, Alex, every time one of these gigantic habit energy, powerful forces, right, you feel it in capturing you and encapsulating you, if you just stop. Just stop. And breathe. And just say to yourself, I am aware that XYZ habit energy has arisen in me. I see it. I'm aware of it. I feel it. And you just breathe, and you just relax. You don't fight it, you don't struggle, you just acknowledge it. And you just look right at it. And if you look right at it, you will see there's nothing there. Mind, by its very nature, is not physical. It, you know, has no form. Right? Mind, by its very nature, is made up of mind stuff. Right? What's mind stuff? What's a thought made up of? I mean, what's a thought made up? I mean, I love it when people tell me, you know, you don't know these kind of heavy thoughts I have. You know, my response is, I'd love to see it. Could you show it to me? I mean, I'm a curious guy. Let me see this heavy thought. And they look at me like I'm crazy. The truth is, I'm looking at them like they're crazy. There's no such thing as a heavy thought. Thoughts don't weigh anything. But if you think they do, you will get weighed down.
I think of your line from the retreat that I'll always remember, the disembodied spirit lost in the ethos.
It's a ghost-like existence. Yeah, but again, we say these things. We're impressed by them, and yet we just walk out the door and we're just swept away by them, as if they're real. And if they're solid, you know, again, stopping and being mindful and looking deeply will reveal the true nature. The true nature of thoughts and the true nature of the self that's perceiving the thoughts. As it is said in the Touching the Earth for Us, both are by nature empty. The one who bows and the one who is bowed to, both are by nature empty. both the thought and the thinker, both by nature empty. Mindfulness, deep looking, will reveal that simple truth of the way things are. And then dealing with self and dealing with thoughts is not so difficult. It's not saying that they don't need to be dealt with, right? But if you're dealing with them as these hurricane force winds, you know, and the objects are 3 tons, and myself is some kind of solid, permanent, implacable thing, well, that's going to be a lot of work. that's significant. But if it's just a wind, just a breeze, a few things blowing about, that's all. It's a very different job. Are there obstacles that you anticipate may make it difficult for you to continue in any way but the way you've done it in the past? Yes.
When you asked the question, what came to mind was a habit energy that's a little more subtle than yours. And that is encountering a household task. And I can, part of this I understand better now because I encounter this whole household task and an unpleasant phenomenon arises. And so.
Such as what?
Like just.
Like what whole household task?
Pardon?
Like what kind of household task?
Vacuuming the carpets. And so.
That's sort of like adverbs, isn't it?
So
I mean, somebody has adverbs and you have vacuuming.
Right?
Right? So you don't like to vacuum the carpet?
Right, so what will happen is...
Charlie, stop! Please stand up. Would you stand up? Okay, Charlie, thank you. Now, I want you just to imagine that you're holding a vacuum, okay? Could you do that? And let me just see you. Just pretend that you're vacuuming. There you go.
You're smiling.
There you go. Now, I want to understand, what is so difficult about that?
Nothing.
I rest my case. Can you please sit down, Charlie? Please sign him up for vacuuming at the center. That was. I think we found the perfect man for the job. It's getting hot in here, Charlie, eh? Any other obstacles? Yes.
You called it in the session with me trust, and I could see that when I moved to the retreat, there is that part of me that goes, okay, I know how to do this. And starts to think, And then I do Dharma practice in my own way, which is not very much practice at all, but, you know, kind of fantasy life of practice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so you'd like to not have a fantasy life of practice, you'd have to have a real life of practice.
Okay. And have that energy.
You know what trust means? It's really not in the Buddhist tradition or other traditions where they talk about surrender. You know, in Buddhism they talk about trust and confidence. In, I think it's more theistic traditions, they talk about surrender when there's something to surrender to. But again, I think it's the same thing. You know, it's like, if I trust the teacher, if I trust Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, then what? I do what they say. the way they tell me to do it. If I don't trust it, then I don't. I do it my way, or I do it, you know. But if I trust somebody, and they say, Fred, if you do this, go do this, go do this, go do this, and at the end of that, you'll find this. See, if I trust them, then I will just follow their directions the way they told me to do it. If I don't trust them, if I don't have confidence, you know, something else will occur. So surrender means that I have to, you know, my first teacher, Philip Kaplow, I think he actually got it from somebody, but he said real spiritual life begins with the cry of help. Very profound. You know, it's like when you reach the point where you go, I cannot do this on my own. That I have tried, you know, in many ways, you know, to work my way out of whatever I'm in. And it's not working. I need help. I can't do it myself. I don't have the understanding. I don't have the wherewithal. I don't have the clarity. I don't have any of that, you know. Help. And so he said, it's that acknowledgement that one needs help, and actually saying it and reaching out and getting help is where spiritual life becomes real. You know, it's a surrender, it's a giving up. You know, my ego and my egoistic thoughts are creating the problem. And I'm relying on my ego and my egoistic thoughts to solve the problem that it's created. That'll never happen. Never. You can't think your way out of this one, because thought has created the problem. So, you have to start doing something else. Like we get here. Very simple.
Surrender is such a good word. Exactly,
that
conveys exactly what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
Yeah, and
it's not, I mean, trust conveys something else to me, but it is not part of me. Like,
but they're connected, Susan.
Yes.
If you don't trust, then you won't surrender, because you won't trust. You surrender to somebody or something you trust. If you don't trust them, that they know what they're doing, that they really will take care of you, that, you know, you'll never trust them. You'll always be, what? Doubting. And in the Buddhist path, doubt, in the way I mean it, doubting your own capacity, doubting the capacity of the path to transform you, is considered, you know, a saboteur of a spiritual life. You know. In the beginning, it's good to doubt. You know, when you're on your spiritual search, when you're meeting different teachers, encountering different paths, to, you know, question authority, it's, you know, but at a certain point, you know, it's like relationships. You know, at a certain point, if you're going to be in an intimate relationship with somebody, certainly would be helpful if you trusted them, right? I mean, if you didn't trust them, well, there are going to be problems. Does that make sense? It's the same thing. You know, again, it doesn't mean that up to a certain point, when you're in your your selective period, you know, you aren't assessing and all that, but at a certain point, you know, when you get there, it's like, all right, I trust. And if you trust, then I can commit. You know? But if you're always, if you don't trust, then you're always holding back. You know? If you look at your partner and you go, I'm not really sure he's going to be there for me. I don't know if I'm really sure he really wants the best for me, you know? You know, I'm not sure he's just using me for his own... I'm not saying this is true. I'm saying if you have those kinds of thoughts, you know, it's certainly not going to create a healthy, open environment of relationship, is it? No. Like that. So this is, you know, again, this is no different, if anything, but I think it's even more significant, because here we're dealing with our own personal transformation, you know, our own journey in life. And so, you know, I mean, 40 years ago when I began my spiritual path, you know, I mean, when I found real good teachers, I mean, I was, it was wonderful, you know. And found a path that's so true and simple and direct and wise and intelligent and time-tested and wow. Who knew that these things existed? Right? We don't grow up hearing about them, do we? No. So that's why it's said in the practice, finding a path, finding a teacher, finding Dharma, finding a community, we should be happy, right? We should be happy. And that, but you can only be happy if you are mindful of that, you know? If you never think about it, and if you think of everything that's wrong in your life, of everything that, you know, what's missing in your life, then you'll never be happy. I mean, how can that kind of thought make you happy? Right? You know, if you always see the faults of your friends and your spouses and whatever, you know, how can you ever be happy with them? I mean, it's impossible. Right? But if you really focus on their good qualities and all that, and you focus on the good things in your life and the nurturing things, and you support and nourish all that stuff, you'll be happy. Is that true? Anybody disagree with that? I mean, it's simple. And we know that, don't we? Because we know both sides. And ask yourself, which feels better? I mean, this is, you know, this is not deep stuff, Evelyn. This is not hard, so this is simple, right? So we want to cut through the complexity and say, oh, this is, yeah. So we're ending at 12:15, and we want an hour for our closing circle. It is now 11, just a little after 11. Any more obstacles? Yes. This will be the last one.
I just wanted to point out for clarification. Just kind of thinking about your mind. You said, cover that place inside me and nurture it. So I'm thinking, oh, okay, an aspiration such as mindful consciousness. So for me to become more aware of that, nurture that. Have I got that?
Well, you're different than me. I couldn't get too excited about mindful consciousness.
Could you repeat?
The question is, like she's saying, so when you think about finding that place inside you of aspiration that you want to nurture, she said, well, for me, it could be mindful consciousness. And I said, it could be. I mean, I would think, why, Barb, why do you want mindful consciousness?
To be more aware of what I'm doing.
Okay, why do you want to be more aware of what you're doing? If you are more aware of what you're doing, what will that bring to your life?
Loving kindness.
Oh, it could. So, not necessarily.
Peace.
Yeah, so, again, just for starters, see, to me, wanting to have a peaceful mind, right, and to have a loving mind, there's some nice juice there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
You see? And things like mindfulness and meditation and these things and sangha, and, you know, those are all things that will nurture that, you know, that place you find within yourself that says, in spite of everything, in spite of everything, I want to approach all people with a loving heart, right? Even though I don't have a clue and all I know is constant chatter and conflict in my mind, there's a part of me that yearns for peace. You see what I'm saying? That's the part, right? It's very simple and it's very heartfelt. And when you find that, that's the thing that you then nurture by recalling it. you know, waking up with it in the morning. You know, today my life's going to be, whatever I'm doing, I want my life to be about peacefulness in my mind, open-heartedness, and maybe there are a few other things, you see, and you see that you can get behind. That's what, when you said mindful consciousness, I went, well, that's a little too abstract for me. you know what I mean? You want it, because I think it's that stuff that's more heart-based, which has more juice than, right? Yeah, so it's like finding those places in yourself. They're very, very authentic, you know. And you can't really say where they came from, you know. It's not as if, I mean, that was the constant dinner table conversation when you were growing up in your immigrant Italian family, right? I mean, everybody was sitting around talking about how we can develop more peaceful minds and develop more loving, kind relations. Right, you see? So we have to wonder, then, where does this come from? Do you see what I'm saying? It's kind of interesting. And then we might kind of wonder that maybe there's something deeper inside me, right? That's deeper than all my conditioning and all the schooling and the, you know, the family upbringing. That's very, you know, I feel it strongly in me. You see what I'm saying? And you may look back and realize it might have been there with you even back then. You know, maybe a little, you sort of remember and you see, yeah, it's kind of always been there. I never knew what it was. I never had the words for it, or, you know, I grew up in an environment where, you know, nobody was talking about it, so it's like that. And all of a sudden, you know, when you encounter spiritual paths and you hear these teachings, you go, oh, I'm not crazy. You know, I'm not crazy. Yeah. Just again, since we are just about to end, you have been 4 days in silence, and you have been in a verily rarefied environment, even though it kind of seems, by the fourth day, kind of normal to be going around bowing at people, you know, and being silent and all that, and hearing bells and gongs. I mean, so we will soon be returning to our lives. Some of us, perhaps in our home life, it is a little more congruent because of our stage of life or how we live with what goes to retreat. And other people, in other life, we may be going back to situations that are very different, right? So please acknowledge that. And do your best to take your reentry slow. Try to, over these next days, you know, a lot of times when you've been in an environment, no matter what you, how you rate your retreat, but just in this kind of environment where there has been a lot of meditation and a lot of silence, oftentimes when you get back into the world of activity and stimulation, it's like, whew, there's a part of you will just like, you know, like an alcoholic that hasn't had a drink in a couple of days, you know, it's like, can't stop, you know. So be careful, okay? Because you don't want to kind of, because you can very easily just kind of frit away all your energy that you've gained. You want to kind of keep it. So just watch that. Again, doesn't mean you don't relate to your home environments. But also keep a little private time to just kind of stay in touch with yourself. You know, some people go, wow, I just did 4 days of meditation. I mean, that gives me at least a 2-week pass. You know? Right? You see how this mind works? It's not worth listening to. When just the opposite is true, because we want to bring it into our daily life. Right. So it's very important that we continue to meditate and find those places just like you've done here, okay? And to take, you know, outdoor walks and just stop and, you know, look at a flower or look at your child or just, you know, just look very simply. Appreciate. Be mindful. So we'll end here.